संकीर्तन की जय धर्म हरे कृष्ण महामंत्र की जय संकीर्तन महायज्ञ की जय ऑल ग्लोरी सो समुद्र
हरे कृष्णा
ऑल ग्लोरी सो समुद्र
हरे कृष्णा
ऑल ग्लोरी सो समुद्र
हरे कृष्णा
ऑल ग्लोरी सो ग्लोरी टू श्री गुरु एंड गौरा नमो
प्रभुपाद की जय नमो श्री कृष्ण स्तव देवी महाशिवाय नमो श्री कृष्ण स्तव पतिला
So do you want to do a round of introduction?
Yes, that would be good. So we know each other.
If you can all mention your name, what else you want to...
Name and how long they have been in touch with ISKCON.
Okay. If you can, Nitya Gopal Prabhuji, you can start probably.
Hare Krishna. So my name is Nitya Gopal Krishna Das. And I've been in ISKCON, I think, 12 years, but I'm still very new. So, yeah.
My name is Mahesh, and I've been in touch with ISKCON since 2005. I'm still very new.
My name is Parag, and I've been introduced to ISKCON since last 2.5 years, and it became very prominent when we started coming to Bhakti Vriksha.
My name is Ashish, and I've been in touch with ISKCON since 2012.
Hare Krishna, my name is Amol, and I came in contact with ISKCON in the year 2000, but actually I really came in contact with ISKCON in the year 2011 when I came to New Zealand.
Hare Krishna, my name is Parama Karuna Das. I came in touch with ISKCON in 2008, and then sort of, you know, after some time tried to take it a little more seriously. And yeah, it's so nice. Thank you.
My name is Dhruva Premdas. I'm joining ISKCON India Mumbai in 2012.
13 years.
Hare Krishna, my name is Amir.
This is his first program.
First day here, but I am visiting from last 6 months to ISKCON Temple. Yes. Thank you.
In fact, Samir Prabhu and Mataji, his sister, both helped us in Janmashtami preparations as well.
I'm Ishwari Devi Dasi. From 2007 onwards, our family is in ISKCON.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, I'm Anandita. I got to know about ISKCON in 2002 because my family used to visit that temple. But proper introduction was done in through Bhakti Vriksha, which was 2.5 years ago.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, I'm Prema. I have been in touch with ISKCON since 1998, but I'm serious from 2000.
My name is Sarah Raj. I came to ISKCON in 2007.
Ratan Lapani Das. I joined ISKCON in 2006, 8 years before. But struggling to reach spiritual advancement. So I pray for you. Bless us from this
occasion.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
No, Prabhuji does nice study and he gives lectures as well in temple sometimes.
Yeah. I am very modest in my approach. He is only exaggerating the situation.
Hey Krishna Prabhuji, I am Parul and I came to ISKCON 5 years back when we came to Wellington, and I am seriously following not seriously, but I started chanting and reading books after coming to Bhakti Vriksha since 2 years.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. I think my first experience with ISKCON Temple was at the Lotoka Temple when I was probably about 10 years old. And then when I was 16, I came to New Zealand, so everything was over my head. And then Jagdish Prabhu and Sridhar Mataji became friends, so I came to know them in 1998. Since then I've probably been more of a congregation member than me.
Hare Krishna, my name is Gitanjali, and I'm recently got introduced. I'm being a little selfish with God because I'm only started chanting in the Kartik month, which is good, isn't it? I'm getting triple benefit out of it. And the other thing I want to mention to you is, like, when you took us through that Radha Kund places, I did Govardhan Prakrama when I was 15, but now I knew actually how many places were there, you know, when you showed us those 90 slides, and then I knew, I actually missed everything, but I knew that it's a moonlight and I was doing that.
I haven't shown everything yet.
Yeah, they're still missing.
That is still incomplete because I was composing it and I didn't get enough time to finish.
Yeah, but I would love if you can share it with Amrish.
Yes, as soon as I have finished it, then I'll pass it on to him.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
Whoever wants it can get
it. I'll share.
Thank you.
Okay, that's very nice. Thank you very much. It's been actually a very great pleasure having come here. so many nice devotees. The mood is very nice. I find the temple environment. I mean, of course, I came here. Some people might say that externally I wouldn't know the internals. Every place has its internal part and the external which others see. But overall, the main thing is that somehow or other someone is interested in spiritual life. It doesn't matter really the externals or what is happening with different people or what their moods are. This is it is an art actually to become Krishna conscious even. Because you have to learn the art of a swan. The swan can take water and milk in one cup, mixed together, and he will drink the milk and leave the water there. So, and then there's another saying which says that one should be able to accept gold from a filthy place, or good advice even from a sweeper on the street. So irrespective of how low or high someone's position is, it actually does not matter. But what you gain out of somebody is what matters. But of course, as we try to progress in spiritual life, it is very, very important that we somehow or other get very, very elevated association. So our elevated association in the beginning, everyone gets through Prabhupada's books and through meeting those devotees who are actually preaching around, trying to educate people in the science of Krishna. So, therefore, it is actually a great art. And sometimes there may be many, many questions, doubts, and they should come. If they don't, either we are not intelligent or we know everything, so we don't have any questions or doubts, or we didn't understand a thing. So how can we ask questions? You see, so anyway, I was talking to Ambarish Maharaj Prabhu about today's program and asking him what should be the topic, and he was saying we will first see if there is any questions before I speak about something, but actually I am not prepared with any specific lecture, and it will have to be that they ask questions.
No it's choice.
It's a must. It's a must. I'm sure there are so many people in this room, and it's not that we know everything, so there must be plenty of questions. So I would request very humbly that please assist me in my service by asking some questions, and whatever I can, I'll try and throw some light on. So who wants to start?
So no question is stupid. All questions are very important.
Yes,
and
don't
most
get
of
me
the
wrong.
Most of the time we think that, oh, how can I ask this very silly question? But you would find out that many other people are also having the same doubt, but they are not asking. So please ask. This is the star.
Yes.
How can we make steady progress on the path of Krishna consciousness?
Steadiness actually comes from from associating with those who are steady. That is the key point. So, if someone is not steady, it means he is having difficulty being fixed in one point. And why is he having difficulty? It's because although we may have some knowledge, the application is very difficult. Why? Because of past conditioning. It may be from this life how we have been. It can be from 10,000 lives back. So what we are, what the kind of nature we have at the moment, this is like a culmination of all the things we have done and the past experiences that we had in many, many lifetimes. So naturally, we have been covered over by so much dirt from the past. And this dirt is not easy to remove. The habits are there. Habit is not easy to let go. And these are not just habits we see every day. These are ingrained within us from time immemorial. They get etched into our memory. And it only manifests itself when the situation warrants it. When the situation is right, then these things sprout up. As someone may look like a very nice, peaceful person, and you know, talking to him, laughing and all that, and he may be having a lot of anger in there, which is not manifest yet. Just keep the right kind of environment or provocation, and he can erupt and probably kill somebody. Dangerous criminals are kept under maximum security. When you look at them and you talk to them, it's like normal. They could kill you. So what's on the surface to us also is not necessarily always obvious. There can be so much past conditioning, such heavy conditioning. And therefore, we form something like called a real habit. We become conditioned. That's why we are called conditioned souls. And we are conditioned against our nature actually, which we don't know. The conditioning is just like you know, some people who are living in very hot countries when they come to the cold countries. Very hard for them to tolerate. But after some time of being exposed so long with the cold, they gradually start adapting to it. So that is adaptation of the body. But similarly, there has to be adaptation of the consciousness. Our original consciousness is very pure. And we are really Krishna conscious people with all nice qualities. Because we are part, the jivatma in the soul within the body, it is a part of Krishna, it has all wonderful qualities, like Krishna has wonderful qualities. So if we see someone not having those qualities, it means there is some covering, something stopping that from coming out. So, the way it can come out is by association, just like the way you can get accustomed to cold, is by being in the cold climate. So we have to seek association. And even after association, sometimes some people can very quickly take it up, some people take longer to change. What is that depending on? Again, how much layers of contamination are there? You know, my Guru Maharaj used to tell me of a story about habit. Guru Maharaj used to tell a story about habit. So there was one time a thief. Do you know that story? And this thief was actually going, he was thinking, I've done so much sinful activities. I would get punished. Let me atone for my sins. So he decided to go on a pilgrimage, bathe in the holy places, and get rid of all his bad karma. So he, of course, when they go on pilgrimage, they go on a group tour. You know? Then there's someone who explaining and they go like that. So there were so many people in the same group, and they all went together, and at night time now they're camping somewhere, they're together. But he is a thief by nature. As soon as it's night time, you know, that internal, it's called a vega. Vega means a pushing, a kind of pushing is there. It's due to that habit. And he thought, wait, I am here to get rid of my pap. But I can't steal. I'm on pilgrimage and I have to be good. But he could not help himself. He got up. Everyone was asleep. Of course, if he steals, where is he going to take it to? Anyway, but he couldn't stop himself. So he picked, whatever it was, in the morning everyone, when they woke up, they couldn't find their belongings. Then they realized that everyone's belonging was there, but misplaced at another person's, side beside another person. So he couldn't stop himself, but he went around changing everything. So at the end, everyone found their belongings. And they thought, who has done this? So he got up. And he said, I am really sorry for putting you all under this trouble. But I want to tell you a little bit about myself. I am a thief by profession. And I just could not help myself when night time approached. And that's why I changed, picked up one bag, put somewhere else and did all of these things. I asked for forgiveness. This is like the strength of what habit is. A person can be dying from something and he can still, due to habit, want it. Kill himself. It's to that extent. So we are very, very habituated. To us, the spiritual life is like not second nature, not third nature, God knows what. Spiritual life is like, you know, way beyond. And initially people think it's impossible to practice it in this day and age. Most of the people think like that. Because they are so conditioned. They cannot imagine, you know, it's like, you know, go to the Western countries. They cannot imagine that you are a vegetarian, you don't eat meat, fish, eggs, you don't gamble, you don't have intoxicants, and you don't have illicit sex. Then, what is your life? They can't imagine. And someone very pure, and born in the Himalayas maybe, to, you know, in the ascetics, living there, he cannot imagine that someone can be gambling and someone can be drinking. You know, it is completely opposite thing here. So it's a question of relativity also. So the thing is, what does association do? Association actually makes you see that it is possible. It makes you see that what I am going to do, what I am trying to do, here is the practical way to do it. Because someone is steadily doing it. Then you get some hope. Oh, I thought it was hopeless, but now I can see some hope. Yes, it is possible. So how to steadily make progress is through association. And what is association? I can be sitting right beside you. But I may be talking to you even. But that may still not be association. Or I may be staying so quiet and I am hearing two people talking. That can also be association. I'm taking everything in. So very many ways. But stick to this process. How to stick to the process? Is that what you're...
Yeah.
How to make progress on this path? The way to ensure your progress is always keep very good association of those who are practically able to live according to spiritual principles. That is the safest way. In this day and age, this is called Kali Yuga. People can hardly live together. they have so many differences. Even those who are married find it so difficult to live with each other sometimes. It's an age of quarrel and hypocrisy. In this day and age, then, to try and live within and steadily associate with somebody can also be a challenge. But here is the hope. If you are sincerely looking for that progress, then Krishna will make sure that you get full opportunity to make progress. It is not only our endeavor which counts. It's our sincerity Krishna sees, and He makes arrangement. As soon as someone decides, yes, I want to find out more about spiritual life, and ultimately if there is a possibility that I can attain the spiritual position, then if it is possible, I want to know about it. If he's very, very sincere, Krishna will then give him the opportunity. He may be in the middle of Namibia, or he may be in the Amazon jungle somewhere with the pygmies. Doesn't matter. If he really sincerely wants to know, Krishna can do anything. Can make the arrangements. Right? Okay, any other questions? That's the first one, though.
Yes. You raise such a nice point with the old habits. This is an amazing, amazing thing. Where I get on, you know, work with everyone I work with, but there's one person in a place that I go to where I've never experienced it with anyone. There's what they call personality clash.
I can't imagine that, Prabhuji, with you.
There you go. But nevertheless, it happens, and I'm sure other people have this problem too. I don't know what it is with this individual, but and like the thief story, is a struggle. It's impossible for me to get on top of it because, you know, the whole thing wells up inside. They come up with all sorts of crazy ideas, and so what's my question? So my question is, you know, I maybe just need some guidance of how to
deal with such a person.
Well, it's myself. It's not dealing with them. It's all happening in my crazy, crazy years.
Personality clash. We have to understand what it actually... First, if you understand, we understand properly what personality clash actually is, then we can find... It's like when first you diagnose a disease, then you can give a solution. But if you can't diagnose it, if you don't know what it is, then you don't know how to deal with it. So personality clash is like... It's like if you put fire with water. When the fire is very big, water has no effect. When there is a lot of water and the fire is little, then fire has no effect. So, everyone is under a mixture of the three qualities of goodness, passion and ignorance. Everyone is forced to act according to that. No one is independent. It's like invisible ropes tied to our hands, feet, tied to our eyes, our tongue, our nose, and forcing us to do things. So, and not only that, we are so tied down to our nature, this is called nature. You can change the behavior of a person, but you cannot change very easily the nature of a person. To change the nature, you have to have come out of total illusion, and your real nature gets manifested. And even that nature can be very different from someone else's nature. So when there are personality clashes, you have, that means someone is getting irritated by us, say. That is your situation. It's not that you are so much getting irritated by him, but how do you react is the question. So, the best way, it says, to get the least amount of repercussion from others are two things. This is mentioned by Narada Muni in the 7th canto, 15th chapter of the Bhagavatam. He says that by good behavior with others and by freedom from envy. So if we behave very well with them, despite their nature, and we are non-envious, we don't wish them anything ill luck or bad, automatically the amount of difficulty that is going to be coming towards you from him will reduce. This is the method given. There's two things: freedom from envy of the person and behaving amicably with it. That's the practical closest solution. I'll give you another example. Many of you might know this story. There was a Brahman living near the Ganges River. And this Brahman every day would go to the Ganges and take his bath. And there was someone who had become really inimical to this Brahman. So one day the Brahman went to take his bath in the Ganges River. And as soon as he came out after bathing, cleaning himself, this person spat on him. You know this story. So he went again and he took another bath. He came out, he spat on him again. And this continued until his 50th bath. At no point in time did the Brahmana get angry. He just again went back into the Ganges, took his bath, came out. After the 50th time, this person broke down and offered him his pranams. And he said, "I am really sorry what I did to you." So he said, "Why are you sorry?" He said, "I did such an injustice to you. I kept spitting on you." He said, "No." He said, "Because of you, I have been able to take 50 baths in the Ganga and wash off so much of my sins." It depends on how you take it. You can get so irritated, you can get so angry at how someone treats you. And at the same time, you can become so tolerant. And that wins even stone hearts. So, therefore, we have to, to solve any situation, how to start thinking of the solution, there is a technique. There is a problem. How to solve the problem, there is a very nice technique if you know Shastra. And that is that try and bring the situation in the mode of goodness. As soon as a situation is tensed up, it means there is so much passion and ignorance. So we have to have the art of how do we change the situation in such a way that the whole atmosphere becomes in the mode of goodness. That's the first step. Now, look at this example. Suppose you go to somebody and is that a good example? No. I'm finding it very difficult to get an example for that, but the whole point is that somehow or other, there is another situation where you can bring a situation just like someone is preaching. The devotee is predominantly in the mode of goodness. And he's going to someone who is totally in the mode of ignorance. And he's thinking, now, look at this. I'm trying to get him out of ignorance and make the atmosphere, atmospheric change to goodness. He will rebel. If someone is in a total mode of ignorance, he doesn't appreciate mode of goodness things. So it's easier said than done, the solution. The first thing, of course, we should try, if it is at all possible, to make the situation turn amicable and in the mode of goodness. But many times you'll find this problem, that you actually cannot. Someone can be so envious, the more you teach to him, try to bring him to the mode of goodness, the more he'll become angry and in the mode of ignorance. Therefore, even to accept the mode of goodness, there has to be some past sukriti. Otherwise, scriptures ask us or request us to avoid the situation. So that would be the complete answer. You can try in the beginning to bring the person in the mode of goodness. Now, for those who are a little bit new, goodness means peaceful, self-controlled, honest, you know, very caring. All of these are goodness, signs of goodness. Passion means very desirous, ambitious, very active, you know, all of these kind of things. Heroic, courageous, enthusiasm. This is passion. Ignorance is lazy, irresponsible, despondent, full of lamentation. These are all different signs of ignorance. So, if at all possible, how do we change a mode? In the scriptures it says that you can change. Sangat sanjayate kama. Karana guna sanga asya. We can change the situation, even we can change a body by changing our guna. And it sangat sanjayate kama means actually it changes, the gunas change by association again. So, if, again, first of all, we have to make sure that we are not envious of the person. We don't react enviously. We also don't, we behave very well with him despite his behavior towards us. Secondly, if you keep doing that for a long time, another way to conquer such a person, even an envious person, the last resort, is unknowingly give him some prasad. This is something, if they really hate you, they won't take even what you offer them to eat, if they're really angry with you. But it normally situations are not that bad. So you do a very amazing thing. One day you take a very nice pack of some eatables. You say, I brought it for you. So you'll see, the hardest of hearts can be melted with love. This is the, if nothing else can work, then this should work. And if this doesn't work, then stay away. That's the final advice. Right? So, next question.
Yes. So coming to the enviousness, we are in the material world because of our enviousness with Krishna. And Bhagavad Gita 2.12, it says, never was the time that I did not exist and you and the things these are like this. So during when the jivas were in the spiritual world, there was such and cheat, and it's not contaminated. Then under that environment, why did they fall down? Because the cheater is pure. Where did we get an enviousness?
Yeah, this was a big, big thing. There were so much discussions about this. This is a big time question, actually. You know. So, did you get any answers for that, Ambarish?
So, how did you get envy in Vaikuntha? You're saying.
If everything was pure, how does one become contaminated?
The best answer is let's go there and find out. Because souls are keep falling, they are falling down anyway, every second.
No,
so
there are two very good answers for this. Do you want to answer?
No, but I could take a guess. I don't, but I could take a guess.
Yeah, take a guess.
It's the independence, right? Even though, you know, the living entity has independence, so they can misuse the freedom. It's always misuse.
But it's all so pure. It's all cheap.
Does misusing the independence need any impurity in the beginning? Suppose I have to make a choice between black and white. I can be completely unbiased and make one choice. Another thing is, if the jivas, there is mention of jivas falling from the spiritual world, but not those jivas who go and serve Krishna there. Falling of the jivas from the spiritual world has been mentioned only for those jivas who are in the Brahma Jyoti. What happens is, Krishna has three aspects. We were talking about this the other day. The Absolute Truth is understood in three different phases. Vadanti tat 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 vidas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdete. So, there is effulgence in the spiritual world. That effulgence is called Brahma Jyoti. In another term it is used, which is called Brahman. Within, it is the spiritual world, it is the spiritual sky actually, which is full of light. And what is this light made up of? Just like the sunlight in this world is made up of what?
Molecules or something.
Molecules. There are certain molecules. So just like the sunlight is made up of certain molecules in this world, similarly in the spiritual world, the Brahma Jyoti light is made up of these chitkanas, these jivas. Everything is totally spiritual there. They are floating around in the air with no shelter. Every jiva is an individual person. And a person is never satisfied with no activity, no relationship. As soon as we talk about a person, a personality, there is emotion, there is likes and dislikes, there is so many things that is attached to a person. In the spiritual world, there are certain jivas who are in the Brahma Jyoti. And they feel dissatisfied. They are looking for not just Brahmananda, which is available there, because Brahmananda is simply like, oh, I don't have to die anymore. I've solved that problem. But then what do I do now? I am in existence, I'm eternal. Eternally I'm just floating around in space. How am I going to be satisfied with that? So, those jivas in the Brahma Jyoti generally do not have any information of anything higher than the material world. So because they're looking for relationship, they're looking for some enjoyment, some sort of reciprocation. They don't have any information of the spiritual world, so they come down to the material world. This is one fall down from the spiritual world that is mentioned. We would not be surprised if we were one of those particles in the spiritual world who actually fell down like that. But it never says in the scripture that one falls down from the planet where Krishna resides, where he is already having a relationship and is serving the Lord. That is full shelter, that is completely spiritual. Do you understand so far? Okay, that's one point. So, in a way, yes, we were in the spiritual world, but in a way, we were like not in the spiritual world most. So, there is a book by one of our parampara acharyas. His name is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the book that he wrote was called Jaiva Dharma. This book is actually the handbook for all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. It's like they have a Bhakta training program. This is like that book. So in that book, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that actually we were never with Krishna. We were never with him. Sometimes there is a way that Prabhupada says we were with the Lord and then we ended up here. But actually those who are with the Lord and already engaged in devotional service, there is no possibility of that happening. So the jiva uses his independence, more possibility that he doesn't have any idea of what God and his kingdom is, but he's floating around in the spiritual world, in the sky, he has no shelter. So looking for shelter, the only option is this. So he comes here. That is actually the best answer. There is no other better answer than that. And there's some other explanations as well, but they don't come close to this. So how did we get contaminated? Because we were looking for satisfaction. You are sat in the spiritual world, you are sat, chit and ananda. There is ananda, but there is not that much ananda. Because there is an explanation, there is a verse in this in the scriptures where it says that for those who have tasted the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet and devotional service to him, for them, the ananda which you get from Brahmananda, which is being in the spirit, is like a calf's hoof print compared to a vast ocean. How much water can you get in a calf's hoof print? So, there is unlimited pleasure available to those who are already serving Krishna in the spiritual world, but in the Brahmananda, there is limited pleasure. There is Satchidananda, but there is limited. And even the chit is limited. Because he is not fully aware of complete spiritual perfection. So we may be from that part. Alright? Is that clear? Yes.
So I'd just like to understand, so the Jivatma is Atma and Paramatma. The connection, the relationship. So we are Jivatma.
Brahman.
Was it on Tuesday when I came to this session, you were talking about that once you meditate and come to that level where you realize yourself, you come to the self-realization, you become a Paramahansa. So what is at that point? Is it the Atma, you merge into the Atma? Or, no? So
okay.
Are you able to please explain?
Yeah, this is a big misconception which has been floating around, because you might have heard statements like Atma hi Paramatma hai. You know, Atma is Paramatma. It is not. I was explaining in Auckland this thing, that there are two words used. One is, first of all, let's look at the word Atma. Atma is a Sanskrit word. And it can mean many things depending on the context. Atma doesn't have one meaning. Atma sometimes refers to the mind. Atma sometimes refers to the body. It's like someone commits suicide, they say, Atma Hatya. Can you actually kill Atma? That you say Atma Hatya? No. In that case, Atma Hatya means killing of the body. Because the Atma is eternal. You cannot kill it. So, Atma sometimes refers to the mind. Bandhur Atmatmanas tasya yenatma ivatmana jita. Anatmanas tu shatrutve vartetatma iva shatru. Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, when he uses in this word the word Atma, it means the mind. So, it can either refer to the mind, it can sometimes refer to the body, and the word Atma can at other times refer to the spirit soul, which is we distinctly call Jivatma. Now, so, that Jivatma, Krishna explains what is the definition of a Jivatma. Mamevangsha Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. He says the Jiva is Mamai Vangsha, it's my part and eternal part. Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Sanatana means eternal. So it is an eternal fragmental part of God. And who is Paramatma is God. So if we are eternally a part of God, there is never a time. Just like he mentioned that verse, Natvivaham Jatunasham Natvam Neme Janadipa Nachevana Bhavishyama Sarve Vayamataparam. That you cannot, never was there a time, Krishna says, when I did not exist, nor you, Arjun, nor all these kings, Janadipa. And never will there be a time when we will all individually not exist. That means we will always exist, and we will always exist in the same manner. Paramatma will always be Paramatma, Atma will always be Atma. Now, what is the difference between Atma and Paramatma? That means super soul and the soul. The difference is this. If I pinch here, can you feel it? Can you feel the pinch? If I'm pinching my body here, can you feel it? You can't feel it. So my body is actually conscious throughout my Jivatma. My Jivatma is spreading its consciousness only throughout my body. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. The Jivatma within my body is only spreading the consciousness throughout my body. So I only know what is going on in my body. I don't know your pain, your pleasure. I can't experience it. But the Lord, Super Soul, the Paramatma, whatever happens in your body, if you pinch even like this, He can know. So what is in our hearts, what is in our body? There are two. There are two spiritual entities within our body. One is the Atma, which is ourselves. Another is Paramatma, which is God Himself. An expansion of Krishna. So, if you hear this point, if someone is spreading this round, that Atma is Paramatma, that is totally bogus, it's not in the scripture. It is a made-up thing, propagating. Because by definition, you can see, we are not Paramatma. And that Paramatma feature is everywhere. It's all-pervading. It's within the heart of every living being. It's within every atom. And because He is everywhere, He knows every single corner of the universe, what is happening at any one time, simultaneously. That is His unique position. So within our body there are two. One is the Atma and there is a Paramatma. In the Svatashvata Upanishad, there is this sloka. Also Katha Upanishad. These two Upanishads tell you that it's like two birds sitting on a tree. One bird is eating the fruit of the tree. Fruit is sometimes, depending on the tree, a bitter fruit or a sweet fruit. But the other bird is not interested in the fruit. And that bird is this bird's friend. But this bird has forgotten that he is my friend. And he's just busy eating the fruit from the tree. This is the kind of explanation given. So always, Paramatma will remain Paramatma, Atma will remain Atma. And Atma is very, very tiny. Therefore, he has the same qualities as Krishna, but in minute quantity. We only can feel touch sensation on our body. He can feel touch sensation of everybody. Why do you think he can become present anywhere instantly? Because he is everywhere. Instantly he can come and become manifest. We can't do that. Does that answer your question?
It does. The connection. So if you connect with the spirit soul, so this, either you go internally. So
you connect with the spirit soul, or you connect with the super soul.
With the
we are the spirit soul.
The spirit soul. Yeah,
yes. The jivatma.
So that's through meditation. Is that what you
mean? That's called the connection with the Lord is called yoga. Meditation is just one process, but you can meditate on any nonsense thing also. So not, the word meditation is not specific, it can be applied to anything. But when you say the word yoga, you say it specifically to link the Paramatma with the Atma. And what is that link? That link is actually that the part of God is actually a servant of God. It's like a part of this body is my hand. What is the constitutional hand that it serves the whole body? If the hand tomorrow says, hey, why should I serve? I want to be the master. And you cut it aside and put it aside, will the hand be happy? No. Its constitutional position is that it serves the body, and in the service to the whole body, the hand is healthy. It cannot be happy on its own independently. So similarly, the jiva, when he's away from Krishna and his service, he cannot be happy. It's like a fish out of water. No matter you give him a nice air-conditioned room to stay in, give him nice foodstuffs to eat, give him a nice bed, even have the fish married. You can do whatever you like. He's not going to be satisfied until you put the fish back into the water. So we will not be satisfied no matter how much we try in this world. This is not where we belong. We are out of our natural environment in the spiritual world. How do we know that? How do we know that we are out of our natural environment? Because the spirit is eternal, but the body is temporary. If I am eternal, I should have an eternal body. But I have an incompatible body. I have a body which gets destroyed, dies, but I never die. So I'm constantly wanting not to die because the spirit within me is not dying. Because he is eternal, there is a call from the spirit saying, I don't want to die. So even though when we identify that we are the body, then we want the body not to die. You see? This is how the consciousness actually gets converted. When we think we are the body, then we don't want the body to die. But if we think we are the Atma, we have nothing to worry about. It never dies. Does it make sense?
Yeah. And so just to complete my final sentence.
Okay.
So when we say that we are all one.
No, we are not all one.
So at the Paramatma level, at the Jivatma, we all have our own nature.
No, every level we are always different.
Different.
We are individually always different. There is never a time when we become one. Now, regarding that part of becoming one, it is like there is a green tree in which a green bird goes. Has it become one with the tree? Seems like, but it's not, really. So, sometimes what happens is the Lord gives someone impersonal liberation. the jiva goes and looks like he has merged into God. No. He remains eternally a jiva in the spiritual sky. They get that kind of liberation is called Sayujya Mukti, in which they actually go into the spiritual sky, like I was talking about, and become one of the molecules there. So, have they become one? Yes, sort of, but really not. Okay? So it will never be a time when we can become one with God. We can't. Yes, we can become one with God in purpose. We can become one with God in His desire. Meaning that whatever the Lord has desire, our desire we make the same. That we can do. So there are certain statements in the Shastra where it says, oh, I have become one with the Lord. It means one with the Lord in purpose or one with the Lord in the desire, but not any other way. Okay. So any other questions? Yes.
Just before you're mentioning about the answer to Raj Prabhu's question,
yes,
about the jivatma is not actually being in the spiritual world, or in Krishna Loka anyway, but they were in the impersonal Brahma and they fell down from there. But in some places it's also explained that we're actually not in the material world, like we are just in a temporary dreamlike state, like we're actually in the spiritual world still, but it's like when we go to bed, sometimes we have a dream that I'm being chased by a tiger. But actually when we wake up, we realize that we are not actually being chased by a tiger and we're still in this particular place. So isn't it that this material conditioning or material world is just like a temporary illusionary state while we're still in the spiritual world, like a dreamlike state?
You have heard it that way.
Then, and I think I read it somewhere, but I may be good.
No, this is a very fine line here, where one can become an impersonalist.
Yeah.
See, we are eternal living beings, part and parcel of Krishna and serving Krishna. But when we are talking about conditioned living beings in this world, they are actually here. There is every evidence. It even mentions in the Brahma Samhita that by the glance of Vishnu upon the material creation, then he sends the jivas here. If they are in Vishnu, Mahavishnu, there is a form of Mahavishnu in which all the jivas lay dormant until the time the next creation takes place. Once the creation takes place, then all the jivas are released by Vishnu glancing at material nature. It's almost like a man impregnating a woman. You know, so by his glance, he impregnates the material world with the jivas. So the jivas are actually, literally, in the material world. They are not in the spiritual world. But here's the answer to your question. When we go back to the spiritual world is an eternal place. There is no past, no future. It's all present. Because there is no time there, no material time, everything is current. So, suppose you go back there, we are saying someone goes back there. The time is, in terms of eternity, the time is so negligible that it's like you never left. It's like you never left the spiritual world. It's almost there. Yes.
An extension to his question.
Yeah.
So then, when we get initiated, our spiritual master sort of realizes our swarup, and he gives us that name. So what does that imply then? Is that our future position, or is that our
past position?
Sort of, are we aspiring to achieve that position?
No. Every jiva eternally has a position.
Okay.
Has a what is called a siddha swarup. It's called the Siddha Swarup, which is even with us right now. We are in the spiritual body. Just like right now, I'm wearing these clothes. The clothes are shaped according to the shape of my body. Similarly, the body is shaped according to really the shape of my soul. And there can be varieties of bodies. But then, if you go one step further, jiva is not just a spiritual spark on its own, it has its own spiritual form as well. And that is an eternal form that he already has. He just has to realize that.
So that eternal form is in the spiritual world or from the Brahma Jyoti? So that original form...
Everything in the spiritual world has its spiritual form.
So originally our spiritual form is from the spiritual world?
Yes.
So then is it from Krishna Loka or from the Brahma Jyoti?
Even while we are in the Brahma Jyoti, we still have a spiritual form. But it's not manifesting. It's not like you're doing anything with that form. Because you have no information of another form. You don't have it that way.
So wherever in the universe we go, we carry that identity. We are the servant.
Yeah, we have a specific identity which is eternal. We are a servant. Now, we may be servant in many different capacities. It's like, you know, look at Hanuman. Hanuman is a servant of Lord Ram. And you, no matter how much you try and preach to him and tell you, hey, Krishna is a Supreme Personality of Godhead, you become a devotee of Krishna, you know, he will not. He is totally satisfied being with Ram. That's his eternal position. So every jiva is sometimes satisfied with the position he is in. So sometimes the question is asked, well, then Krishna Loka is the highest attainment. Are there some jivas who actually aspire to go to Krishna Loka from the other Vaikuntha Lokas? Yes, sometimes. It's like one example given is from Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Gopakumar. He was not satisfied even when he went to Vaikuntha. He was not satisfied when he went to Ram Loka in the spiritual world. So he came back to the earth and then he went straight to Krishna Loka. There is a big story about that, which you can some other day. Don't want to delve into it, but that is there. Now, we are getting into a very, very high level esoteric topics. It's like we are all Mahatmas sitting here.
Yeah,
are there some more down to earth questions? Yes.
Thank you, Guruji. Now, I've been listening to your two lectures, so we haven't been able to come to all of them. But one of the two or three, four questions there, one of them has three parts. One is actually...
You've got seven questions.
It's going to take up all the time.
You've got seven questions.
1A, 1B, 1C.
Okay, I give you a chance to ask one. So that everyone has an opportunity.
This is about actually dealing with people who are not non-devotees.
Not non-devotees.
I'm sorry, they are non-devotees, not non-devotees, but they are non-devotees. Now, you talked about one of the examples where your landlord was actually raking somewhere, probably in Rotoka, and putting the leaves under the mango tree, and then burning it, not realizing that the tree also has soul and that sort of stuff. How did you deal with that person in that case?
The only way to deal with them is to make them realize the presence of, you know, living entity in everything. A person can only realize that. See, the thing is, once one becomes very cruel-hearted, hard-hearted, how do they become like that? Because they eat anything and everything. They eat all other creatures. They eat meat. The element of mercy disappears from the heart. And the heart becomes very hard. You don't feel it when you give pain to others. You don't even see it happening. When you see it, you can't see how that is painful. You know, I've seen Fiji. Oh, horrible things. You know, they chop the head off a chicken and they let go, and it is a headless chicken moving around, flapping until it finally, you know. And they are all laughing. Because they're having big fun, it's just flying here and there and looking at it. It's like, as if it's like kite flying or something. They have no pain in their heart to see that this is suffering, intense suffering for somebody. So, that kind of realization will take a long time of purification to come. It's not going to be easy. So if I can go all of a sudden to him, why did you do that? This is not right. And he, what's the big deal? He would say. So sometimes you may want to tell the truth right there, but it may not go well. You see? It may not go well. Didn't I tell that story here about from the Panchan Tantra?
Which one?
Panchatantra, it's called. These are stories to illustrate certain points in life. They are not really true stories. They are made up stories which have a lesson, right? So in the Panchatantra, there is a story that. That there were four monkeys. Do you know the story?
I read Panchatantra when I was a kid.
When you were a kid.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes they teach it in our Mayapur Gurukul too. So there were four monkeys, and they were up to, as usual, some mischief. And there was a bird watching them doing something really stupid. So stupid that the bird started to say, what are you doing, you stupid monkeys? That's not the way. This, that. Started giving advice. The monkeys kept... It's probably...
Here?
It's right behind you. So I cannot escape the sun. It's all right. So, there's a reflection in that window upstairs. Don't worry. That's not the one. So these four monkeys were actually doing something very stupid, and this bird was, you know, sort of like rebuking them. You idiots. You don't know how to do it. That's not the way. This is wrong. Kept harping, and the monkeys kept disregarding her. Kept disregarding the bird. And she kept advising them. So they disregard, and finally one of the monkeys grabbed hold of that bird and banged that bird down dashed it on the stone, and she died. And then it says, what is the lesson learned here? Do not give advice where it is not wanted. Now, there is a general rule, like you know what to do, but someone is so stupid and they may not listen to you. So you try and tell. If they are not accepting it, don't keep pushing. You keep away from that. Now, why did I tell you this thing? Your question was.
The question was about dealing with that person who was actually raking, collecting the leaves and.
Yeah. So the thing is that where advice is not wanted, this will be something like that kind of situation. You can't advise such a person because he wouldn't understand that philosophically. It's incomprehensible to him. He sees nothing wrong with it. So many people eat meat, they see nothing wrong with it. You know, one argument I heard lately, what was it, about meat eating? Said, our whole body is made up of meat. What's wrong with putting meat in it? Huh?
Eat yourself.
That's a good answer to it.
Yeah. This is they come up with all sorts of ridiculous arguments.
Just leading on from the question. You know, recently we went to Cessnock, new Gokula farm in Cessnock.
Yes.
And we also went to Canberra and many places, and even while you're doing gardening, you know. As a devotee, it feels when I see earthworm actually come out and, you know, in the process of actually gardening, they're killed or, you know, they're cut into half. And then while you're working, you see the ants as well, and you try and avoid, but there are so many of them that, you know...
It becomes impractical even to avoid.
To actually, as devotees, are we need to be, or are we expected to be careful when actually taking our steps? Because, you know, that's just one side of it. The other thing that I had quite disturbing yesterday was that all the vegetables that comes into the open market these days actually sprayed with fish oil, they are sort of fertilized with bone and blood to actually make them grow very fast. So as devotees in living in cities, we are sort of quite kept with, you know, what we can and what we can't do. And even cow's milk, for example, you look at it now. I was talking to Avacharan Prabhu at New Gokula, and he said, you know, they tried to actually get this bull who was blind, and apparently would have been actually ended up in the slaughterhouse if they hadn't actually given shelter to that bull. So as devotees in the city, what do we do? I mean, do we continue to actually eat those vegetables which are actually broken that way? Do we actually, you know, disregard some of those things to be more practical?
Well,
what's the balance?
All right. There are a number of things here. Let's first address the first thing, that in the fields they are planting something, they're actually tilling the field. So many earthworms, they get killed there, so many innumerable ants moving around. It's practically impossible for you to get anywhere without stepping on them. And you inadvertently end up killing them. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, every endeavor, when you're trying to perform your duty, whether you're a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, there will be some fault. And he mentions these kind of things as faults. There is a fault in this duty. I mean, a Vaishya is supposed to till the fields, grow grains. But the fault with that is, when you till the fields, there's so many of these living entities are killed. Krishna advised that if you perform your duty, then you will not, by performing the duty, you'll actually please me, prescribed duty. But they have faults. Then it says, but that does not mean that you give up work which is according to your nature and take up some other work which is against your nature. It's better to perform your own duty imperfectly than to perform another's duty perfectly. So every endeavor has a fault. When the kings used to go and hunt in the forest, they were shooting deer. Why they were shooting deer? Deer is not harmful to anybody. But they were shooting deer because deer is a fast-moving target. And on a battlefield, if they have to train to fight another person, they have to have a fast-moving target. So the deers were there, and they would actually shoot their arrow and kill the deer. They would also kill ferocious animals like, you know, tigers, lions, so that the rishis could have the forest in an inhabitable state and not get eaten by them. Is that sinful? Yes. Is tilling the field sinful? Yes, it is. All of these things, you get reactions. What did the kings used to do then? They used to perform big sacrifices to atone for those sins that are there in the day-to-day running of the kingdom. There are so many things that are anomalies. They will be false. So similarly, in tilling the fields also, there will be so many faults, but you have to do sacrifice. And the sacrifice for the current day and age recommended is chanting the holy name. So there are certain things which are unavoidable you have to do. You do not do that willingly, but there will be situations where you cannot just help it. In that situation, then your chanting will take care of that. It will get rid of those sins. But you don't purposely, intentionally try and do it when you can avoid it. That's the whole point. Do not purposely, intentionally kill something when you could have avoided it. But if there is no option, then there is no option. It's like in the deity room sometimes. You know, some temples, they don't keep up with the cleanliness, and then the cockroaches come and the mice come, and in Krishna's kitchen, all of these things happen. What do we do now? We keep them, and you try and catch them. It's very difficult to catch them all and take them alive outside. Where do you put them? I saw one time, is a very elevated devotee in our society. He went up like that in the air and grabbed a mosquito, take it outside from his room. I don't think there is any harm in mentioning his name. He's my Guru Maharaj. So I was with him and I see he never killed a mosquito. He's always taken it up outside. So one day I was with him in Vrindavan. And he always kept me with him when I was anytime near him, he would always keep me there. So I slept in the kitchen area, and it was very hot. So he slept in an enclosed security veranda. And he used a mosquito net so he doesn't get bitten by mosquitoes. So it was around about, I think, 1 in the morning, and I heard, and I woke up, and I saw the lights were on. So I went up there, and I saw my Gurudev. There were so many blood marks all over. There were like literally so many mosquitoes inside his mosquito net. And yes, he killed a few of them. Now I could have said, how could Maharaj do that? My Guru Maharaj, this is Vrindavan mosquitoes. Now, did he get a reaction? He may have. Now, any living entity, Krishna is in that living entity. Somehow the mosquitoes got in, and they got in. There were so many bites all over his body. Now the thing is, what is more important? The life of a mosquito, or someone who can become really sick and all this Krishna service gets disrupted? Certain times you may take certain steps which are not necessarily really right or authorized, but you just have to. And if you don't get the rest during the daytime, you have so many things lined up in the nighttime. If you don't get rest daytime, you have so many things lined up and everything, you know, you're not up to it. So therefore, what did they used to do? They used to main thing is there are two things you do to try and get rid of these kind of reactions. You keep all of your activities connected to Krishna. If you're tilling the fields and producing those vegetables or whatever, you offer it to Krishna to get rid of that reaction. You know, and in India they still do that. They call it Hariyali Tij, and it's the time after the rains, after the monsoon, there's so many nice vegetables coming out. That's exactly when that Chaturmasa first month is. Nice vegetables are not allowed to be eaten. Right, spinach. So, at that time, what was I going to say?
They offered to Krishna.
Yeah, they,
first offering.
The first crop from the field gets offered to the Lord. They all do that. But in Krishna consciousness, we offer every time. See, it's not just once. So all of those killing of those things to get things grown for Krishna, there's no reaction. You got the point? Because it's linked to Krishna. In the temple, we do mopping, and we do, you know, there's so many germs being killed every day. Yeah. So, therefore, chanting is a must. You cannot avoid chanting, because every single day, even though we are devotees, we inadvertently kill so many living entities. It's unavoidable. So chanting is the process. That's the yuga dharma. That's the sacrifice for the pleasure of the Lord that finally actually gets it. But we should not do that intentionally. If you do, it comes under the 7th offense on the holy name. Nam no baladyasya hi pava buddhi. Oh, I can get rid of all my, you know, pap by chanting. So let me keep committing like, and keep chanting. That mentality is offensive. But a devotee should try to avoid as much as he can. Just like another example, there were some things really unavoidable in America. They started putting, what is that fish oil kind of thing, in milk.
Yeah.
Every, isn't it? Something like that. They contaminate all the milk everywhere. They don't release it before they do that. So the devotees actually asked Prabhupada what to do. Even in those times, there were some other issues like that. And Prabhupada said, what can you do? Yeah, there's kala patra. You have to see time, place, circumstance and do things. And try and avoid. That's why the bottom line for your answer is, with the minimum of violence, one should serve Krishna. With the minimum of violence. One should maintain oneself and also engage in the service of Krishna. So that will then give you the answer to every situation. You can judge according to that. Alright? Any other questions? Yes?
Prabhuji, I've got two, three questions mixed. So,
It's related to each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's basically, we know from Bhakti Viksha that service purifies our false ego, and chanting purifies the mind, and reading purifies the intelligence. And I wanted to know that how do I purify my false ego? What type of service should I be doing? Because if I do deity worship at home, or I'm making garlands, that comes under archana, that's not very menial service. So it's that particular type of service that purifies you more. And regarding chanting, I have a question that inattentive chanting is increased. Sometimes if you feel that it's increasing your problems inside your heart more, and your some sort of weeds are growing or something like that. And then if I want to do attentive chanting, what do I do? Does that mean that I need to read more so that my intelligence gets purified and I will be able to do attentive chanting? So those are easy questions.
So the first one, we'll go one by one. First one was?
Service.
Service. How do you purify the false ego? According to the Bhagavatam, it says, by serving the great, by service to the great devotees, you know, pride goes away. Just like, suppose, suppose you go, let's say, what is a good example? Say if you go to right near a mountain, standing right next to the mountain. If you are standing further away, then you come, you know, the mountain looks quite all right to you. It's not so big. As you keep going closer to the mountain, it's like you realize that you are just this much. And the mountain is so huge. So you come to actual realization as to how small we are. Right? Similarly, as we go closer to Krishna, we will realize how minute we are. And that automatically, actually, completely purifies the ego. But Krishna is generally not understood by us without first understanding and going through service through his devotees. Therefore, we serve those who are great souls, and by seeing how great they are, we realize where we stand, and automatically the ego is finished. So, whether you realize that through reading, whether you realize that through chanting, it actually does not matter. What we should realize is that somehow or other, just realize that what is our position, eternal position, which is small. That will get rid of the false ego. And if there is pride, then pride cometh before the fall. It will fall. You cannot withstand it. So that's the first one, right? Does that answer it?
So, any type of service is... Yes,
all services are purifying. I mean, there are varieties of services, but it's especially when you need to intellectually understand things, you may start reading, but it's not just reading which gives you that realization. Remember that. It can satisfy your intellect, it can give you logical reasons why, but it doesn't still mean you are getting purified of your ego. What really purifies you is when you serve the great souls and realize how great they are, and immediately your false ego goes away. So, and what was the next one again?
The chanting. How do we do attentive chanting? Is that through reading or how?
No, you do attentive chanting by being very attentive to hearing what you are saying through your mouth. That's it. That is attentive chanting. As soon as you start speculating, thinking something, maybe like this, maybe I see Krishna in the sky somewhere. then all of that, you know, sometimes devotees try to imagine a form of the Lord in the sky or within their minds and then chant and try and concentrate on that form. If, generally speaking, if you in your mind see a form of Krishna, it is normally okay, right? Because really that form, you know what Krishna looks like, you know in the scriptural descriptions of Krishna's form. So you will not imagine something as Krishna's form. You will imagine only Krishna's form as Krishna's form. Then it is real, it is not actually imagination. Right? And you may want to then, you may imagine it in your mind, chant, thinking of that form, but that is still not recommended as japa. That's not recommended as japa. The real japa means we have to realize, because that has a little bit of impersonalistic understanding. Why is it impersonal? Now you tell me. Why is it that if you think of the form of the Lord and you are chanting, it's a little impersonal? Why?
Because Krishna's name and Krishna
yes.
is the same. So we are
because
that
we are different. Now thinking that Krishna's name is different than Krishna. But if you realize that Krishna's name is Krishna, then you will try to hear the name that you are chanting. And as you keep hearing that name, that is association with Krishna directly. That's the direct. There are two things in this world, huh? Which are spiritual in nature. What are they? One is the holy name. Holy name comes from the spiritual world. This sound vibration is not from here. It's borrowed. Golokera prema dhana hari naam sankirtana ratina janmilokene tai. Narottam Das Thakur is singing. Golokera prema dhana. This is not from here. This is from Golok Vrindavan. This sound is coming. So when we utter that name of Krishna, it is directly spiritual sound vibration. It does not have a quality that material sound has. So just concentrate when we chant, we should be only concentrating on the sound coming out of our mouths. We hear that sound. That is Krishna. No different. Nama Chintamani Krishnas Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Abhinnatvan Nama Namino. There is no difference between the name and the person whom the name is denoting. But there is a difference between the name water and the substance water. If we say water, 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 pani, pani, and we are thirsty, the name will not quench our thirst. We'll have to drink the substance to quench our thirst. That means there is a difference between the name, water, and the substance water. But Krishna's name and Krishna are non-different. So when you chant Krishna's name, it's exactly Krishna. No difference at all, in full potency. Nam namakari bahudhani jasarva shaktis. He has invested all his energies into this holy name. That he is non-different from the name to that extent. Kali kale nama rupe Krishna avatar. Krishna has descended in the Kali Yuga in the form of his name. So the name in the Kali Yuga is considered a form. So that's what you concentrate on. And if you do that, if you just try and hear the sound, there is no possibility of anything else coming in your mind. It will be attentive chanting. But it's when we stop hearing, and we start letting our mind wander elsewhere that this happens. And even in the practicing state, you will still see that the mind is very fickle. You try to even hear the holy name and it will keep going. And what does Krishna say to do under that situation? Bring it back. As soon as you realize it's gone somewhere else, bring it back. Keep doing it. And this keep doing it all the time, this is called abhyas. It means practice. And once this practice, if you keep doing it and you become more and more detached, these two are the things. Huh? What is that?
Bhuveshwari Prasaktam?
No. No, no, not that one. There's another sloka. The main reason why our mind is wandering inattentively elsewhere is because of our lust and other things. Our mind is diverted by other things we find more interesting than Krishna. That is, means calm. So Arjun once asked this question in the Bhagavad Gita, that what is it that even though I am sometimes not want, I know it's wrong, but I am still impelled to do it. And Krishna says, kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samudbhava mahashano mahapapma vidhyanam evaverinam. That actually is the greatest enemy, this calm. And then it says he has taken strategic positions. The calm has captured our mind, our senses and our intelligence. These are the three things we have to use to become Krishna conscious. But these very things are covered over by this lust. So like an enemy has taken up strategic positions to attack you. The very, very source of your existence has been captured by these things. So then he said, Krishna says, you should still learn to control your mind. He says, Tanchalam himana Krishna pramadi valabra. It's very hard to control my mind. It's like if I were able to even control the wind, it would be possible. But I think to control the mind is impossible. And what was Krishna saying to him? Asamshayam mahabaho. This is the verse. He says, Asamshayam mahabaho. There is no doubt. Asamshayam means no doubt. Asamshayam mahabaho mano durnigraham chalam. That the mind is very difficult to control. It's very chanchal. But it is still possible, he said. How? By abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha grihate. By abhyas means practice and by detachment. So these two things Krishna is mentioning. But who is able to do this all mentally? Oh, I have to practice, I have to do this. Therefore it says, try and just do very attentive chanting and the mind will always stay there. If you keep chanting very good rounds, the mind will come under control very quickly, because it's not a yogic practice. The chanting itself is a devotional service. All other things, they are not really services to Krishna directly, but chanting is direct service to Krishna already. The means and the end is the same in Kali Yuga. You go to the jungles and you meditate and you do all sorts of things to try and come to the point where you realize and you do some devotional service in the end. But here, chanting is devotional service right from the start. So you bypass so many other things. So that's why it is a very powerful process. And we say every morning, what is it? Bahu janma kari yadi shravana kirtana. Dabutana paya Krishna pade premadana. If you for many, many lifetimes, even if you keep chanting, but you commit these offenses, you will not get Krishna prem. But it doesn't say that you will not get benefit. Krishna prem is the highest. So anyone, even with offenses they are chanting, they are getting benefit. So sometimes the mind will go, bring it back, goes, bring it back, goes, bring it back. If you keep doing it, Krishna will help. We are never going to be able to do it by our own endeavor. But when we put in our effort, then Krishna will help. Just like there is one example given in the Bhagavad Gita again. That is the example of our determination. Remember? The sparrow in the ocean. A little sparrow laid some eggs near the ocean, and the ocean waves came and took the eggs away. And the sparrow said, hey, bring my eggs back. And the ocean started to laugh. What will you do? You know? And the sparrow said, if you don't give back my eggs, then I'm going to empty you. And the ocean started to laugh even more. Because how is it possible for you to do that? And of course he can't do it, but he started. He started taking little water in his beak, throwing out. Little water in his beak, throwing out. And after a little while, Garuda was passing by. And he saw this little bird. He said, what are you doing, taking this water little? He said, oh, the ocean has taken my eggs back. I'm going to empty it out. I want my eggs back. Oh, so the Garuda was impressed by the determination. And then Garuda turned to the ocean and said, he cannot empty you out, but if you don't give back the eggs, I can empty you out. You see, immediately help comes. So although it seems like an insurmountable task, it is completely difficult to do. You cannot actually go it's beyond you. You put in the effort as much as the best practice you can give, the best effort, and then Krishna will help. Krishna will help like this, this living entity.
Oh, Krishna.
Yeah. He came from the garden, actually.
fresh flowers.
Seeking your protection, bro.
That's right. Well,
it was hearing
Krishna Katha. Yes.
My Guru Maharaj says that if your chanting is good, then eventually Krishna reveals you initially through name, then form, qualities and pastimes. So how does that happen? And then what do we do in that state? I mean, do we still, while Krishna is revealing to us his name, form, quality, pastimes, do we still sort of just focus on the name or the...
No. We focus on the name, and then we also focus on hearing the Bhagavatam. So we focus on his pastimes. At times, Prabhupada has given, according to what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that one should do 5 things as a complete package. Mathura Vas is the first one. You live in a holy place. Second, you chant the holy name. Third, you read Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, study that. Fourth is you associate with devotees. And fifth is do deity worship. If you do these 5 items properly, you're guaranteed. So it's not like only chanting, because to only be satisfied with chanting, you need to be a very high level devotee. Because we are restless, if we could have chanted day and night, then you do nothing else to do. But because we cannot, so there are other services to do. So we are reading, we are developing some understanding of Krishna's pastimes. These pastimes, the more you read, the more you can then remember Krishna. How can we remember somebody if we don't even know anything about him? What to speak of loving him? We can't love someone if we don't know him. So by reading, by hearing, we get to learn more and more about Krishna. And what that does is that it actually increases our desire to attain him. Is that okay? Any other questions? I am the culprit.
Which one are we ringing now?
This is my Gayatri alarm, actually. It's
6:30.
So,
if there are more questions, we can continue. Otherwise, we can do aarti.
Any other questions? Are you satisfied? You have more questions?
Questions we ask later on.
I think what we can do is we can, if there are any urgent questions or somebody wants to go early, then they can ask the questions now. Or otherwise, after prasadam is done, if Prabhuji has some time, we can continue.
I have
no other
engagement in the evening today, so I can extend it a little after the program. Alright, so we start with the auntie now.
If there are any urgent questions, like if somebody wants to go after prasadam,
if they
want to ask any questions, then we can have those now, or we can do aarti. No?
Now, does anybody feel like I said something which was not right or inappropriate? Is there anything really doesn't sound right?
That's all okay for me.
Actually, it's all Shastra. We should never speak anything not Shastra. they speak Shastra, there cannot be any problem. But sometimes, yes, there will be doubts and we have to clarify. And that's not a problem. Nowadays I see that people are discouraged from asking questions. All those Purohits and Pandits who do different rituals at different people's places, if you start asking questions, they say, hey, you're doing some khandan, you know. You're criticizing, you're doing that. Arjuna was asking directly Krishna questions. Was he thinking that Krishna is what? No. Questioning does not mean that you are challenging the person. Yeah, questions should be in the submissive mood. Pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya. It should be pari prashna. Pari prashna means submissive inquiry. Means with a motive to learn. But sometimes questions are like, purposely ask a question to make that person feel belittled or something. So if there is some other motive behind it, then that's not submissive question and that is of no benefit to anybody. So, but generally speaking, all questions are very important. Because there are three kinds of people who actually get purified. The speaker, the person who hears it, and the person who asks questions. All three get purified. Why does it mention specifically the person who asks questions?
He's inquisitive and he wants to learn more.
No, that's not the reason. Why does a person who asks a question get purified?
Because other people's doubts get... the doubts that people have...
are being eliminated.
Eliminated.
Very good. The doubts are getting removed. That means the contamination, the cloud of illusion is getting washed away. So that's the purification. The doubts are removed. Questions are generally asked to inquire about something. No, sometimes the questions are not because you have a doubt, but because you don't know. You just don't know anything, so you ask something that you don't know. Others are, I have a doubt about this thing. I know this thing, but how can it be like this? So there is a doubt about something and then you ask questions to remove the doubt. And doubts are called in the Shastra demons. And when the Brahma created this material world, he created what is called doubt. It's one of the offsprings that came along. Alright, so we'll start with... Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Prabhuji. Nice landing.
Yeah.